Welcome to Adventures in Landlording. Each episode, we pack our bags and hit the trail to answer some of the many questions plaguing landlords across America. We're back again, and we've been hard at work scouring the internet for the greatest landlord stories to share with you, our dear listeners. Hey, Krista.
Hello.
How's it going?
It is so good. We're having a great day.
We're having a great day. All right, let's get into it. This one comes from TikTok, and the headline is, "When Tenants Make Your House Their Own." Okay, so Krista, there's a lot happening here. So basically, this video has move-in day and then move-out day to compare just the before and after of what these delightful tenants did to this rental unit. And wow, they have some creative interior decoration.
Yeah, they really feel called to colors that I wouldn't necessarily put on my walls.
Yeah,
certainly not without permission.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of the things they did with the doors. kind of went for like a dungeon feel with like heavy steel doors, and they put this like brick pattern. I guess it's painted. They did like a brick pattern on parts of the wall as if the wall has been chipped away and there's bricks underneath, and then from those bricks they hung some wild like metal piping. And I don't know what you do with that. It looks like about 6 inches of metal piping. I don't know if they were like hanging clothes on it.
Choices were made. That is for sure.
Choices were made.
Where would you even start with it? what do you do?
Well, for this poor landlord, our condolences, first of all. This is a mess to have to deal with when your tenant moves out. The first thing, as always, I would say, what was in your lease agreement? Did your lease agreement spell out what a tenant can and cannot do? My guess is yes, because that's a pretty basic thing to have in your lease agreement. Hopefully it was in there. There's pretty standard language for what this would say. Typically it's like, you as the tenant can't paint, or maybe you can paint, but you got to talk to me first. It doesn't get as specific as you can't add dungeon doors. You can't put pipes in the ceiling, those kinds of things. But it would say, like, you can't, you know, drill into the walls. It depends on whatever the landlord is comfortable with. And some people are totally fine with their tenant altering the walls in whatever way they want.
Yeah.
And then if they do these things, it's also important in the lease to put what the consequences are. So, for ADA requests, typically the tenant will pay for modifications to be made, and then they will pay for costs associated with returning the unit to its original condition. But this is not an ADA thing.
I would think not.
This is something else entirely.
Yeah. Listen, I don't want to be too harsh because everybody has their own opinions on what looks good versus not. But I also think maybe this landlord could send their tenant, you know, a guide to some local interior design courses and like really try it. Button this down. They had a vision. There's a vision with these metal door facades and adding exposed brick and making it look like that's breaking through. That's usually something that you try not to look at when you're in a rental. And they're like, no, we're going to highlight that. We're going to actually really emphasize this bit.
I mean, you just don't get it. So this is also a good reason to do periodic walk-ins, walkthroughs of the unit.
Yes.
So, you know, you can let the tenant know that every month, every 3 months, every 6 months, you're just going to be checking out the unit. And you can totally frame it like, I just want to make sure everything's working for you. A lot of our users will even say they'll use the air filter, like changing out the air filter. They'll use that as sort of their excuse to come into the unit. Obviously, they are actually changing out the air filter, but it's an opportunity also to see, like, are you doing anything insane in here that you shouldn't? Like, for instance,
everything going on here.
Everything.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. Like, give them proper notice as is required by law, but then going through and actually having those walkthroughs every so often. I'm guessing if that were to have happened, maybe the landlord could have seen them starting to install the metal doors.
Yeah.
And also, some of their paint colors are going to be really hard to cover up.
Uh-huh.
Like that deep blue, that yellow, the red. Like, this is going to be a lot of work. So hopefully you keep really good receipts and you take the security deposit money that unfortunately seems like it could have been forfeit based on all these changes.
You think?
I think maybe just a smidgen at least is going to be needed to take back this property into its final form.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So we've talked about, you know, how you could maybe avoid this, but now that it's been done, so I'm going to guess this is going to cost a lot more than the security deposit. And the property owner wants to get those expenses back, understandably. The first step, document everything. Mm. So that's going to be a fun one. walk through here, take pictures of everything. Awesome that this person has the before pictures, because that's what you would compare, obviously. Even this TikTok now is proof of the before and after. But itemize everything and actually have a list of damages and the costs to repair it. And then when you have that, you can bill the tenant for the difference. If you do a good enough job, and I suppose if the tenant is reasonable, which may be a big if in this situation, some tenants would look at that bill and say, yeah, I did do all that stuff. I did put dungeon doors on your on your rental unit. So yes, I should pay for that to be returned to its original condition. That would be great if it happened that way. If it doesn't happen that way and it's a little more complicated, you might have to go to small claims court. That gets messy.
Yeah. But, you know, where one dungeon door closes, a window opens. So fingers crossed for you, landlord.
A dungeon window. So in most states, property managers have, you know, between like 3 weeks and 2 months to return a security deposit. Depends on state laws. So make sure you know those. And because of that, you really need to act quickly. So, you know, start itemizing.
Yeah. Yeah, only spend a day in sorrow, head in hands, kind of regretting your choices, and then use the rest of your time to make sure you're taking really good notes, getting estimates as needed. I mean, I don't know what it costs to take out decorative pipes and to undungeonize your doors, but you want to make sure you have everything in a row before you go to your tenant.
Yeah, absolutely. if you screened your tenants better, you could have avoided this. Obviously, this isn't going to show up in a screening report.
It should.
It should. But what they could have done is check landlord references.
Yes.
So any applicant, ask them, can I talk to your last landlord or your last two landlords or whatever? And, you know, maybe in the future they could ask those landlords, did they ever take out your door and put in a dungeon door? Because that's a red flag.
A big red flag.
Are you tired of tenants turning your rental into a weird dungeon? Upgrade your screening process with TurboTenant and find your perfect tenant without breaking the bank. Sign up for free at landlordpod.com.
This one is less of a dungeon and more of a trap, but the story comes to us from _towel2539. Headline is, renting the other half of my duplex to my girlfriend.
Uh-oh.
Red flag should be a waving. But here's the situation. So, Double Towel says, I just recently finished renovating the other side of my duplex and furnished the whole thing with the plan to rent to traveling professionals. My girlfriend mentioned that she would be interested in renting the other side since her lease at her apartment is coming to a close, and what I'm charging would actually be cheaper than renewing. She's very clean, so I know the unit would be in good hands. We would, of course, create a contract to protect both herself and myself. Currently, we are seeking counsel individually from third parties like friends, Reddit, etc., to help us weigh the pros and cons. After researching and collecting data on our own, we will come together to deliberate whether or not this is a good idea. It's not, but we'll continue. Thoughts running through my head are, the relationship now has a new dynamic where I'm her landlord. How will that impact us? 2, would it be easier for her to move in with me? Both sides aren't that big. And 3, a friend gave me the worst case scenario of what if we break up and things turn ugly. Thanks for your insights.
All right. First of all, Double Towel sounds real fun.
So fun. Very fresh.
They sound incredibly analytical in how they're approaching this. Currently, we are seeking counsel individually from third parties.
They will bring together the data and deliberate further, which honestly, I kind of love.
All right. So putting that aside, so they do ask 3 questions here.
Yes.
The relationship now is a new dynamic. How will that affect our relationship?
I have thoughts.
Go for it.
It's going to be challenging to rent to somebody that you have an existing relationship with outside of a rental contract. And I never, ever, ever advise doing it.
Yeah.
It gets messy so fast. And it can really sour a relationship too. Especially because even if you're the most stand-up landlord in the world, you still have now an unequal relationship because you directly control your girlfriend's housing.
Yeah.
That can get really weird. And what if she's not a great tenant? What if she doesn't pay you? And she's like, whatever, you're my boyfriend. I'll just make you dinner. And that'll be like, A-okay. Mm-hmm. What are you going to do? Then you are now having to cover more of the mortgage. It's less of an investment and more of just a responsibility.
Yeah.
And also, she's on the other side of the duplex. So if you get sick of her, she's always right there.
Yeah.
That's kind of rough.
That's kind of rough. Yeah. We should plug our first episode where we covered a story that was kind of similar to this.
Yeah.
Where somebody had fallen in love with their landlord. So that one's called A Lease on Love. Give it a listen. This is a little different because they are already dating and trying to see if she should move in. It just seems unnecessarily messy. Their second question, would it be easier for her to move in with me?
Yeah. I mean, it would be. Again, you know, similar situation. Is she going to be covering half of rent? Like, really make sure you outline all of the expectations and have a conversation and, dare I say, a contract in place to ensure that everybody's on the exact same page and you have something to lean back on in case everything goes belly up, which it could.
Yeah.
It really could. And that could not only sour your relationship, but put you in an awkward spot with your investment.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So really, especially if you're a newer landlord, I'm going to advise, don't do it.
Mm-hmm.
Don't do it. It's just not the move. And the comments largely agree. Mm-hmm. So a lot of them are citing their own experiences with renting to family or friends. And they're saying, hey, a romantic relationship has no place in a rental contract, which I'm inclined to agree with.
Yeah. Don't mix love with finances.
I want to pull up a quote from Lunatic BZ, my best pal. The important thing is that your girlfriend either needs to be your tenant or your girlfriend.
Yep.
If she's both of those things, it's going to create bad dynamics all around.
Yeah, it just seems like Double Tal here is trying to start a rental business and then also separately has a girlfriend who's trying to figure out where she should live.
Yeah.
And Double Tal seems to think they can kill two birds with one stone, but they should not do that. They should do the rental business way.
Yes.
And if they want to live in one half of the duplex, great, and rent out the other side, awesome. And then figure out the girlfriend thing, or rather, she should figure out her own thing.
There are some alternatives that people have suggested. For example, they said, hey, maybe you should rent out both halves of the duplex and find a different property entirely to live in with
there
your girlfriend. Always an option. That way you're on more neutral ground. Another way that you could encourage neutral ground is to hire a third party to be both of their landlord.
Yeah.
One downside is that property managers do cost between 8 and 12%, averaging 10% of your monthly income. So you would be saying bye-bye to some of your profits.
Yeah.
You could avoid that with TurboTenant.com. But, you know, that would at least make it so that you were both answering to someone versus your girlfriend answering to you. But keep that other half of your duplex for traveling professionals. I mean, we know that that's a great market.
Yeah.
Depending on where you live, it could be really lucrative. And then you also won't feel as bad if you need to raise rent or if you need to, I don't know, renovate, do things that could kind of tick off a tenant. When you are ticking off someone who's also your girlfriend, that spells disaster.
Yeah, it's bad news.
It's bad news. Just, yeah, don't do it. From finding your new favorite tenant to automating rent collection, TurboTenant has the tools you need to thrive as a landlord. Get started for free today at landlordpod.com and tell them the podcast sent you.
We know you're a good landlord, but here we're going to highlight a bad landlord. This is the Landlord Special.
Landlord Special.
This Landlord Special comes from TikTok. User More Perfect Union.
A woman with dementia living at this apartment complex in Loveland recently passed away unexpectedly. Now her family says the complex is trying to charge them more than $4,000 in penalty fees because they say the complex says that her death meant that she broke her lease early.
It's completely unethical. I mean, everyone says, well, unethical isn't illegal, but taking advantage of people is wrong.
Letitia Farr was Kelly Gontos' mother-in-law of 25 years.
She was so fun and very family-oriented. She loved her kids, loved her grandkids.
In October, she moved into this Avenida apartment complex in Loveland, managed by one of the largest apartment rental companies in the state called Graystar.
So we thought we would get her into a place that was a 55 plus community. They had lots of events that were supposed to be able to get the seniors out and, you know, mingle so she could have friends.
But in early January, she passed away. Just a couple days later, Gonto says her family received a bill from Graystar asking for more than $4,000 in early termination fees. And on top of that, the company was keeping her security deposit.
We were shocked.
And do you intend to pay that $4,000?
No.
Why not?
It's not right. We feel that if we stand up, others will be able to follow. So we want to set that example that says we're not going to do it, and neither should anyone else have to.
Colorado law says a lease is nullified after a tenant dies, unless the lease says otherwise. In this case, Farr's lease did stipulate that she would be held to the lease terms even in the event of a death.
The manager did offer her condolences, said she was sorry for our loss, but the lease is the lease. So there wasn't really any compassion.
How does that make you feel?
It makes me sad. It makes me feel like we've been taken advantage of.
Her family is not the only one having trouble with Graystar. This class action lawsuit filed earlier this month in Denver District Court alleges the company has charged potentially thousands of tenants with, quote, unlawful junk fees.
Stacked up on top of rent and keeping people perpetually behind.
Jason Legg with Justice for the People Legal Center is the lead attorney on the case.
They're junk fees either for things that aren't legitimate or wouldn't be chosen by a tenant if they had a choice, or for things that you would expect to be included in kind of the base price you're paying for, and certainly that are not adequately disclosed to Colorado renters.
He says Graystar's actions against Gontos's family are predatory.
And you have what's fair and just and allowed by the law, and then you have another actor, you know, this company, using that situation to try to extract more money. That seems very predatory to me.
He encourages anyone experiencing potentially unfair fees to file a complaint with the Attorney General's office and seek help from legal organizations like his.
There's power in numbers, and organizing your community to talk about common issues like that helps them to build power and pushing back on these issues.
So far, Graystar has not responded to our request for comment. In the meantime, Gonto says she's going to continue to take a stand.
This is not something that we're going to tolerate and that we're going to do something about it.
Now, moving forward, the family's hoping that they can change Colorado laws so that other families don't have to go through similar headaches. They've already even been in touch with their local state representative.
Okay, so this one's kind of unusual. Our landlord specials in the past, we have highlighted a mom and pop landlord doing bad things. This time, it's a whole company. Mm-hmm. So the company in question is Graystar. If you're not familiar, they actually are the largest apartment manager in the U.S. with over 857,400 units. In 2023, they had $76 billion in assets under management. And you know how they got all that money? By charging people when they died.
It's very despicable. It's pretty gross.
It's not great. It's not great. And this TikTok is really a news story within a TikTok. And it does highlight that Colorado law says a death nullifies the contract, the rental contract, unless the contract says otherwise, which apparently this one did.
But how is that even a legal thing you can do to be like, well, I know you're dead, but also you're still on the hook?
So we wrote a blog about what to do when a tenant dies in your property. This unfortunately happens. And many TurboTenant users say, what's next? Right? It's a valid question. So we wrote in there that the lease type will determine the end date. If it was a month-to-month lease, the death will serve as a 30-day notice. If it was a long-term lease, it will transfer to the next of kin or the estate executor. If the deceased tenant had a long-term lease, the lease does not automatically end when they pass. It transitions to the next of kin. Typically, the next of kin will want to end the lease, obviously. It is advisable to work with them to end the lease and let them know that you'll treat the death as a broken lease agreement, meaning they'll need to pay rent until you re-rent the unit. So it's still messy. Even us outlining it there, it's still messy. And in a situation like this, communicate.
Please. Please have a conversation. Be empathetic if I can really ask you to do something. Someone died, okay? Your profits are one thing. This is a human life, and these are people who are arguably, probably upset that the person died, or at least are minorly inconvenienced because they have to go through all of this.
Okay.
So lead with empathy and don't be an asshole.
Yeah, and especially charging $4,000 in fees. I mean, that is exorbitant. I don't know what the rent was, but to charge $4,000 because she has the gall to die in the unit, like, wow.
$4,000 because my grandma's dead? That's messed up.
Yeah, and the crazy thing is just, again, how big Greystar is, that this is apparently in every one of their contracts. I mean, to think that they've got over 850,000 units across the country. And, I mean, how many renters don't realize that if they die, their relatives are screwed with these fees?
So screwed. And I hate to be this guy, but everyone dies.
What?
Like, I know.
That can't be true.
But seriously, so again, just make sure anytime there's a contract in front of you, you can read it. You should read it. And you should really highlight things that, I don't know, kind of feel weird or penalize you for a human thing like dying.
Yeah.
Ask questions. Even try and negotiate. I bet you could at least try with Greystar. I mean, better than just accepting it, being like, well, I guess this is fine. I hope I don't die.
Yeah, nobody wants to be signing a lease and be like, oh, well, hold up. What happens if I die? It is a good question to ask,
yes.
And it may seem like an absurd one because hopefully that won't happen, but it could.
But who's to say?
So yeah, make sure you understand your lease. If you are a landlord who is writing the lease, make sure you don't have some weird clause in there where you can bypass state law and screw people over if their relative happens to die in your rental.
Or we will serve you up on the next landlord special.
Whew, there's a threat. Well, that is it for this episode of Adventures in Landlording. Make sure to subscribe on your podcast player of choice and on YouTube. If you have any feedback or you want to share your own adventure in landlording, check us out at landlordpod.com.